Welcome to the Science Witch Podcast, where we explore how science and witchcraft intersect, interact, and affirm one another. I'm your co-host, Inku.
I'm your co-host, James.
And I'm your co-host, Angel. And this is our 76th episode, where we get to talk about one of my favorite topics, plants, with the owner of Moon Maiden Alchemy, Candace.
So I wasn't on this particular recording, but it sounds like it was a really interesting discussion. So fascinating when y'all were talking about burials with biodegradable mushroom caskets.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. My sister-in-law is actually studying to be a grief counselor, and she wrote a paper about these types of new eco-friendly burial methods. Anyway, Candace also talks a lot about foraging mushrooms and their usage of Amanita, right?
Yes. However, as an academically trained mycologist, it's always incumbent on me to strongly caution anyone out there who is listening to never eat a mushroom or forage plant that you're not 100% sure about the ID. So while we talk about our personal relationships with a range of plant and fungal allies in this episode, please remember that nothing we share is intended as medical advice, either for specific plants or foraging in general. We are not medical doctors, and many plants and mushrooms can be harmful if not properly identified and prepared. Checking with a qualified herbalist or practitioner is always recommended. And in the case of Amanita muscaria, this is a mushroom known to have very adverse effects on the body if not prepared properly. Anyone who is seeking to experiment with these fungi should consult a trained or knowledgeable mycologist or herbalist before approaching these fungal spirit allies. While Amanita is unregulated in most places, in Louisiana, it is actually illegal to possess except for ornamental purposes. And for our Dutch listeners, it is illegal to possess or distribute. While, for some reason, psilocybin, when not in a mushroom form, is, however, legal.
And we certainly talked about a lot more than just Amanita. And I always love the opportunity to talk with other herbalists and geek out, especially with someone like Candace, who's a holistic practitioner. We even discovered during the recording that we both are exploring non-herbal modalities like Wim Hof breathing and cold plunges, which we discuss as possible support for those of us needing to cut back on caffeine due to coffee, now in 2025, being at an all-time high price point, and with more tariffs hitting imports from Brazil in August this week, we can and should expect our daily cup of coffee to get even less accessible to US consumers. But in general, what I loved about this chat was how well it fits into our witch ethos of walking the hedge between the poisons and our greatest wild medicines. So if you're one of our fellow eco-witches leaning into local resilience, we especially hope that you'll continue listening and share with us what you think of our hangout sesh with Candace.
And without further ado, here is Candace with Moon Maiden Alchemy. All right. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Science Witch Podcast. Today, we are interviewing the lovely Candace from Moon Maiden Alchemy, and we're going to talk about plants. So as we always like to start out, Candace, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners?
All right. Well, as you said, I'm Candace from Moon Maiden Alchemy. Sometimes people call me Maple. It's just a nickname that was like, you know, over the years of kind of being in the industry just kind of popped up. So sometimes people hear that as well. Started Moon Maiden Alchemy about 5 years ago when I just ended up making like an abundance of things because I just got really excited about like wildcrafting and foraging, and I had some health issues as well that I was like not getting help from anyone else. So I was like, I mean, I kind of want to maybe look into this a little bit more, and ended up kind of like helping myself and my family a little bit, and had a whole shelf and room full of just like jars. I mean, you can see I've got like herbs in every window, every corner of my house. So I was like, well, maybe if I start like an Etsy, and it just kind of like grew from there. So it's been really fun. And I've met a lot of really cool people from it too. So I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes from here too.
Yeah, awesome.
Awesome. Do you have any specific plant allies that you hang out with more than others, or like specific types of issues or imbalances that you most enjoy working with clients or friends with?
Yeah, so I actually started working with plant medicine because there's a lot less side effects that come with it than in my experience with pharmaceuticals. And so I've always been just kind of like really happy-go-lucky, outgoing. And then I ended up getting pregnant and had really, really bad postpartum depression. And I had never experienced anything like that before. So I was like, what is happening? So, I went through what you're supposed to do and, go to the doctor and try and get help. It was getting worse. So I found myself kind of like doing my own research. And the very first plant I think I ended up working with was St. John's wort. And that helped me out a lot. And then, of course, I got into more psychedelics. So I tend to focus mostly on like mental health and finding ways for myself and people that I'm working with to kind of advocate for themselves in like daily regimens, like more like meditation, diet, foods, plant
Yeah.
medicines to help aid that. And I also do psychedelic facilitation. So I'm really big into harm reduction and trying to like tell people, it's okay if you want to like experiment with things, whatever is going to kind of help you out. But I want people to do it safely. So I'm really big on trying to like push plant safety and things like that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. I really enjoy working with Mimosa as it's I worked with St. John's wort for a little bit, but actually with both of us being very ginger, St. John's wort I've found can have some like photosensitivity effects, and I'm already in the sun a lot, and so I've sort of switched over to working with Mimosa the way that I used to work with St. John's wort. And
That's
she's
a really
just
good one.
gentle and fluffy, and yeah, I just and super invasive, and I know shouldn't plant, but I wild harvest and live in a house where someone a generation back planted many of
Yeah,
them. So I'm like, you know
totally.
what? You are here. You are my fairy godmother to keep the depressions away.
Absolutely. Yeah, Albizia, I feel like too is really good just for like multiple forms of emotion as well, where I mean I feel like St. John's wort is it's a really, really good plant to work with, especially with depression and even
Yeah.
anxiety. But I felt like, with like mimosa, you get like grief and anxiety and like OCD, PTSD, all those things. It's just like a really good one. I forgot about that one. I haven't worked with that one in a while, so I'm gonna like put that in my notes to come back to that plant for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's not super widely worked with in the
Yeah.
States, I don't think, which is yeah, maybe a shame. But oh, St. John's wort is also it's one of my first sort of plant loves for similar reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I also am ginger, but I do live in the Pacific Northwest, so it's not like I'm getting a ton of sun anyways, but
Right.
yeah.
Yeah. I'm closer to Florida.
Oh yeah,
So,
okay.
yeah, the sun and I are friends.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah, and I think right now we're living in this moment where we know there's going to be a large disruption, especially with our pharmaceutical supply chains, and that there's almost this necessity to find what else can utilize from plant medicine and such to help us through some of the existential terror that we experience in this here late stage capitalism. So I haven't been using herbs as much for mental health, but I really do love, I'm a fan of psychedelics, of course. One of the plants that I have been working with that people don't think of as a psychedelic, but is totally like go active is mugwort. And I'm about to plant a bunch of mugwort in our folklore plot because I'm with a master gardener chapter and I'm one of the plot managers. And so I manage the folklore plot. And mugwort is just, for one, it's super easy to grow. I mean, we've talked about mugwort on the show quite a few
Oh,
times.
yeah, she's beautiful.
Yeah. And like you can make a pretty potent tincture from her very easily that gives you wild dreams, sometimes very intense. If you have, my partner has like nightmares and stuff, do not take mugwort if you are in a place where dreams are not a good experience for you, because it will heighten that for sure.
I agree with that. I also had a similar experience with Blue Lotus.
Oh
So
yeah.
that was another one. Can go one of two ways, I feel like, with dreaming, but it is very euphoric and a fun one. One I've been really enjoying as well to help kind of with, I think I got like some undiagnosed ADHD stuff going on. I don't know for sure, but it's actually been helpful if you can channel it. And something that I've found that's very helpful with things like that is Amanita muscaria, actually. It's really good. So that's another one that people are like, oh, it's, toxic or it's psychoactive. And it's like, it actually can be really beneficial considering the dosage and everything like that. So that's another one I've been enjoying as well.
Are there specific preparation methods that you would suggest or not suggest for Amanita muscaria, or is it really more about the dose? Or, yeah,
You know,
what's your.
I've heard so many mixed. I think this is one of the hardest ones to find, like for preparation and dosage on. But what I've kind of found, honestly, is I wouldn't go out and eat like just like a raw mushroom just because there's like parasites and things like that. But honestly, I just dehydrate the caps and I will just grind up those and put them in the smallest size capsule. I don't do any, like, I know a lot of people have issues with like ibotenic acid and the muscimol, but I haven't found that going through that whole process of boiling and draining it off and baking it and all that, I haven't had any issues with it. But I have not also consumed large doses of it. I just don't really have an interest in like that experience, I guess, with Amanita. But there's a couple really good books out there, and there's like Facebook groups preparing it for larger doses. But for the smaller doses, I really just dehydrate it. So, and it's been great. And I'll put it in
Interesting, very nice.
and you can even put it in like smoke blends as well, going back to like lucid dreaming, and make some really nice, like with the mugwort and lavender and chamomile and amanita. I really like mint and smoke blends as well. But when you're anytime you're smoking, I guess, a mushroom, which is something people are like, wait, what? You can do that? You want to make sure you're using like a water pipe because of spores. So maybe don't just like roll it up in a. Yeah, that's the only thing I can say about Amanita and my experience with it. But I feel like if I'm consistent with taking Amanita, I feel like sometimes, my brain has sticky notes with like important dates and information, and there's like a high powered fan blowing. But when I'm consistent with taking the Amanita, I've noticed that it's like a little filing cabinet, and I can easily like organize my thoughts and kind of like function. It's been really cool to experiment with that mushroom. So, yeah.
You're like,
That's
whoa.
awesome.
That's like micro dosing Amanita muscaria. Interesting.
And I mean, where I live, they're everywhere, So I'm in Portland, but I go to the coast a lot. I mean, you can go anywhere in the coast and there's just like an abundance of them. So it's really cool to find local medicine that you can process. And, I think especially like going back with what you were saying earlier about it being harder to get things, trying to advocate for yourself and finding those things locally is going to be the best thing you can do,
That reminded me of I was spending some time with my father last summer, and we were in Greeno Park here in Missoula, Montana, and we come across a group of researchers who were just taking samples out of the river and just documenting whatever life they find there. And we strike up a conversation and we learn quite a bit about kind of what's around, and we leave. And the reason we went to Greeno is we were looking for mushrooms, and he finds this big two big fucking things of lion's mane. And probably one of the only like rooms that grows in Montana that you can just eat raw. We were just kind of carrying it back. I was snacking on it, and we passed by the researchers, and they're just like, "What do you have there?" And we're just like, "Lion's mane." We're just like, "That shit grows here. That grows here."
Oh my gosh. How funny. You're like, let me teach you something. Hold on.
Nice. I'm looking up range maps now because I'm like, I often think that down on the Gulf Coast we don't have a lot of mushrooms, but I actually have found some lion's mane. I've been very lucky. It turns out we don't have Amanita muscaria down here, unfortunately, which is actually what variety. I thought. We have a right. We have Amanita. I think it's Panthera.
Yeah.
And the more yellowish, creamy colors. And we definitely have all of the white Amanitas in our pine forest. We're going to super kill you ones.
Yeah.
You know, big preface anytime we talk about foraging anything, make sure you have a very solid ID on what you're doing, because there's a lot of stuff that will kill you as well.
Definitely.
The more you know. Do-do-do. But it's much more widely spread across the U.S. and Canada than I realized, at least different varieties of Amanita muscaria. So that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, so muscaria, Amanita muscaria is a mycorrhizal fungus, and it's one of the few mycorrhizal funguses that's actually become invasive, because when they planted trees from like pine trees, because it oftentimes is a host with pine trees, in the southern hemisphere, they found Amanita muscaria mushrooms start popping up. So yeah, it's pretty widely found. And there is an Amanita species that grows on the Gulf Coast, Amanita muscaria species. It's just a different variety, and I forget what it is because it's been hemphibara or something like that, or hemphibatha. Mm.
Well, I mean, we found them together in mm-hmm. Mississippi, you and
yeah.
I,
oh, yeah.
At the arboretum, but mm-hmm. I've never seen them out here in Georgia.
Yeah, they're pretty, like, they like certain host trees. That's how you can find them. So if you go to like places where you have a lot, the kind of pine trees that they like, because they don't like all pine trees. Mm. They're
right.
Picky like that. I know a lot about them because I studied them when I was still in grad school, but I've never actually ingested them because I've always been a little afraid of them. And so it's interesting.
Yeah.
You say that you're kind of microdosing them to help with ADHD, because I am fairly sure that we're going to see an Adderall shortage, a huge detriment to a lot of people who have come to use Adderall to manage ADHD. So that's definitely something to think about. Yeah. And so you, in addition to using plant medicine, you also have an Etsy store. What other products and stuff do you make? And like, what do you recommend people can do to get, well, that's another question. Let's just start out with like, what else do you do?
Oh my gosh. So I do a lot of things. So going back to the ADHD thing, right? And being able to channel it. I'm very blessed that I was able to kind of be like, I want to do this and hyperfixate on this and then this and this and this. And I've been able to kind of build up my life to where I can kind of do it all. But it's really hard when somebody asks, what do you do for work? Because I'm like, it depends on the day. But I did start as a massage therapist, and I did like sports medicine mostly. But I found that I was working a lot with salves and, you know, like learning how to make my own lotions, because it's just better that way, you know, and in the long run, it is cheaper to buy like a bunch of stuff to make your own product and then be able to apply it, and you have more control over things. So that's kind of what got me started in that. So I do make topicals, muscle rubs with Amanita, actually. So I do make a muscle salve that I've liked to use on a lot of my clients that have nerve pain. So Amanita topically is really good for nerve pain. I also make all natural shampoo, deodorant, toothpaste, things like that, because I realize there's so much chemicals in everything that we are putting on our bodies. And I got trained in nutrition and personal training. So I've been really into holistic healthcare as opposed to like just masking things or symptoms. Yeah. And I just feel like if people are sitting around and like drinking Mountain Dew and putting on toxic body care products, like they're not really living their best, fullest life. So basically what I do is I incorporate all modalities of, you know, movement, meditation, all natural body care products, and just integrating psychedelics into their life to kind of focus on all around feeling good. Because I just feel like, as our country at least, is not looking at like the root causes of things. So I felt like it was important for me to be like, hey, like, what's your diet like? Are you moving? Are you drinking enough water? Are you actually eating whole foods and vegetables that are like local and better for you? So that's pretty much what I do. And I just, my Etsy is a lot of just like all natural products that I've made, tinctures and things that I wildcraft and forage for and turn into things that me and my family needed. And then it turns out like everyone else needed them too. So it was, that's kind of what I've been up to the last 5 years.
That's awesome. Do you do like client work? Do you take on new clients, like at distance or people that are local to you? Or do you more sell in like a retail sense? Where, how do you engage with the public with that work?
So I do mostly like when COVID was around, I found myself doing all online stuff. And so I'll do like consultations for people within my scope of practice, of course. Like I can't diagnose or anything like that, but I can offer knowledge and recommendations for people to advocate for themselves. So I do consultations, but mostly a lot of my stuff on Etsy is just retail stuff. But what I've been doing, because after COVID, I wanted to maybe reach out to more of like the local community and start building up like a community here. Because I just, you know, after being locked down, I was like, I don't know anyone that's as weird as or as cool as I am. You know, I was like, I need to find my people. So I started hosting yoga classes where we integrate plant medicines. So what I like to do is once a month, I have a yoga class where we have a plant medicine that kind of goes with the theme of, you know, like the season or I don't know, the overall vibe. I try and work with plants that are in season and abundant. And then I pair it with a style of yoga and holotropic breath work. So it's a really fun class and thing that I've been doing locally for about 2 years now. The last one I just did was cacao. So we worked with cacao and we did like some like sensual dance movement. It was like an all-woman class or identifying with woman to kind of like embrace their feminine side and let loose a little bit. And I felt like the cacao paired really nice with it because it just like fired up the all the feels and everybody was like energized. It was really cool. So I try to do online and local stuff mostly.
Fuck yeah. I'm picturing that
Yeah.
movie Chocolat right now, only way, way cooler and Pacific Northwest version.
Nuts.
One of the questions I actually did want to ask you about your thoughts is, speaking of cacao, which is another plant medicine that I don't think we can grow here on Turtle Island. Like it is one of those ones that, well, I don't know, cacao can grow in tropical areas, right? Okay. I don't, but
Yeah, just
most of
not on
the,
this part of Turtle Island.
yeah, most of it is grown in Africa. So cacao is going to be one of those products that we're going to start seeing a huge reduction in the amount of. And I mean, the chocolate industry is extremely problematic anyway. But another one I think that I specifically am going to miss a lot is coffee. And so I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on finding substitutions that people can get more locally, people can get more sourced, that will be more affordable in the coming age of which we will have to endure.
Yeah, see, okay, that is such a tough question for me because in former life I was a barista, so I am like severely addicted to coffee. So, but I also feel the pain of, you know, that maybe not being so abundant. So I have gone through cycles of, you know, drinking too much coffee and being like, I'm gonna die, this is how I go. Gotta quit, you know, so I'm like looking for other alternatives. So, I mean, I feel like a couple years ago, if me would have said, you know, hey, cold plunging is a nice substitute, I would have slapped me. But I will say, with a lot of the events I've been doing locally, is we have a portable sauna tent that we will bring to a location like the beach, or I even do have a cold plunge tub, and we'll set it up and let people sit in the sauna and get in the cold plunge and do some like Wim Hof style breath work. And I mean, you feel like you took drugs, honestly. Like it is pretty wild how
Yeah,
much
I've been
that.
doing Wim Hof breathing and cold plunges, at least cold
showers for the last like 10 days. I'm like 10 days into my Wim Hof protocol. That was my like little gift to myself ending the semester. And it's wild. And yeah, I definitely feel like I can get by much better on less caffeine.
Yeah, I agree. And I think too, some other things that work really well are like going back to mushrooms. I feel like they're the answer to life, maybe. I don't know. But
I agree.
Yeah, cordyceps are wonderful. I like to make like a dandelion, maca root, cordyceps. I feel like I have something else in there. I actually have it written down somewhere. I make.
Any y'all seen a common side effect? Think it's on either Max or Prime?
My husband just finished it. I popped in and out.
Yeah, I've heard
of background.
It. But what's it called?
Common side effects.
Okay, common side effects. I have heard of that, but I haven't watched it. So I am definitely going to write that down.
Highly recommend.
I'll put that in there.
Since
but yeah,
cordyceps made you think that?
Yeah, and I mean, something I'm not really sure moving forward what it would look like, but I've had a lot of clients that have had like cow allergies. And I do make kind of a microdose blend that's just cacao and maca and ashwagandha and amanita in there. And it's really, really nice. But again, I don't know how much cacao is going to be available, and ethically sourcing it is kind of difficult, which makes the pricing a little hard too. And I don't ever want to be in that position of not being able to get somebody medicine that they need because of the price. So I did look into theobromine, which is the active ingredient in cacao. But again, moving forward, I don't know how available that is going to be as a supplement, but it's a nice alternative for like the energy effects from cacao without the cacao if you have like an allergy or, you know, can't find the source for it. So sometimes I do that too, but I still do love my coffee, but I will say try cold plunging.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we do have one native caffeinated North American plant, which is down here in the Southeast, and it's Yopon. And that could be an option, at least. I mean, I wouldn't call it a coffee replacement, but definitely it. I think it could be a tea replacement. So like I've done some experimenting with Yopon and like wild grape leaf and a couple of other forage things to sort of like see how well I can simulate like a black tea. I think maybe doing a little fermenting would help on it, but I haven't quite gone that far yet. But
I love
yeah, fermenting Yopon stuff. Is great.
Yeah, you know, I feel like too, it also goes back to people like reevaluating their lifestyle too, because I feel like we are so pressed to be like faster, bigger, stronger, got to do this, got to do that, and really taking a moment to like give yourself time to slow down and actually like embrace life for what it is, you know, and not be like having to caffeinate to go everywhere. I think people would notice a pretty big difference as well on their caffeine consumption if they could do that and maybe get a little more sleep too. So, I mean, that's something I also like to throw out there when somebody is struggling with, you know, caffeine addiction for sure.
Oh yeah, straight up. I'm actually in the middle of that struggle at the moment. I drink way too much Dr. Pepper.
Oh yeah. See, I've done that too. It's rough. Well, hope you pull through.
Thank but you.
I feel like we're going to be forced to make these re-examinations of our life and our lifestyle. Because, yeah, I mean, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and Pepper, they're going up and up and up. Like, every time we go to the store, my partner drinks soda, and it's just, like, $7.48 a case, $8.13 yeah. a case. Like, literally, we go every 2 weeks, and the price just keeps getting higher and higher and higher. And a lot of these things we're going to have to be re-examining. I need to figure out what I can do to live without coffee, because I don't want to have to pay $25 for ground 16 ounces of coffee that isn't very good. So I think it's going to be a challenging situation, but I don't think that in some ways it's all bad. One of my beliefs, and I don't know if you feel this way too, it's like the most ethical consumption is really your connection. The more you can be connected directly to where your food comes from, the more ethical it is. But that's one of the things when me, like, I always try to like eat vegetarian when I go out to eat. But if I can get meat that's ethically sourced, that I know where it's coming from, and I know the cow and everything, and not know the cow, but I
yeah, you know where the cow is.
Right, yeah, exactly. Then I feel like in a lot of cases, it's more ethical to eat meat than to eat something that is, you know, being shipped in from thousands, thousands of miles away.
Honestly, that's why I'm comfortable eating Tillamook cheese and ice cream.
Mm-hmm. I love Tillamook cheese.
Yeah, me too.
So good.
I love it. But there's always this, you have to constantly make these compromises almost. It's like how I can be more ethical, how I can both reduce the amount of carbon footprint, but also not just eat absolute crap all the time. And so, yeah, but there's also the issue of food access and people's ability to even be able to cook. A lot of people working as much as they do, is it's so hard to also have the mental space and energy to also cook at the end of the day. So there's all these other factors to consider. But in my own personal journey, that is one of the things I found, is just the closer I can be to my food, the more it feels better. And you just have that energetic experience where, yeah, I also teach yoga and I've been practicing yoga. And I always find that the more in tune I get with my energy and understanding of how the energy is connected, the harder it is for me to eat fast food. Like the harder it is for me to eat food that, especially meat that comes from factory farms, is like, I taste the suffering. That has made it to where, like, I don't want to go to eat at any of these places, because I know not only will I not feel good afterwards, but the suffering is just, it makes the meal almost unedible for me.
Yeah, I noticed a big difference when I started consistently microdosing psychedelics. That was a huge thing, was diet. My whole perspective on what it is, where it came from, it changed completely. Like, it was shocking. Like, a lot of things about, you know, for the better, or shown light on maybe things that I needed to reevaluate and change. So definitely agree, like getting on that wavelength of energetically connecting with things is really important. And I hope more people, I mean, what's happening obviously isn't like a good thing, but like I said, maybe there could be like silver lining where we can build stronger communities and everyone can have a skill that they can bring and we can come out stronger. You know, that would be great. Healthier.
Yeah. And witches, we are really well prepared for this. Go ahead, Inku.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to sort of raise a very similar point, that the economy that we built after World War II, this global economy, is not great, right? We know this. Honestly, even local stuff. The tomatoes that I get from Florida, which are maybe grown 2 hours from my house, are still grown. The organic ones are grown in ways that are destroying the environment and rely on massive amounts of exploitation and human suffering. And that was a bipartisan effort on the part of the leaders of our country and our economy. And what we're going through now really sucks in so many ways. But at least if we only look at the economic stuff, it's not the way, I mean, it's going to cause undue suffering to dismantle that system in the way that our political leaders are choosing to do it. And at the same time, the system is already causing a lot of suffering and needs to be dismantled. I honestly think RFK Jr. is in many ways totally out of touch with reality. And I'm glad that somebody's doing something about artificial food coloring. Why didn't the Democrats do something about artificial food coloring? Why haven't they done anything about all of the social problems that we keep having to talk about over and over and over again for the last hundreds of years?
Because if they actually fixed it, they'd have nothing to run on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Well, and also, you know, both parties are in bed with the corporations and are going to do what the corporations want. And if that means forcing the working class to eat literal poison and then hooking them on pharmaceuticals so that they can counteract the poison that they gave them. You know, a pox on that house, too. I mean, our main goal right now, I think, as witches and as conscious people, has to be fighting fascism and fighting white supremacy and fighting Christian nationalism. But let's not also forget that the pre-MAGA Antichrist moment that we're in right now was not idyllic for a lot of us. Sorry, that's my soapbox.
Fair enough. We, as witches, though, are uniquely prepared, right? Like one of the things that is actually going to become a lot more harder to get are jars. Jars, glass, packaging, which is, we just always have jars around, right? Because you never know when you need a good jar.
Need jars.
Making our own salves, making our own plant medicine, figuring out ways that we can break that dependence on the pharmaceutical industry. Getting back to one of the points you said, you know, fungi really are the answer for that. I mean, you can have certain types of yeast now that will produce insulin. Mm-hmm. And if we could just start producing that for people with diabetes at a more localized level, then we completely take back the ability to with insulin. And fungi are so amazing like that, you know, like the common oyster mushrooms, they have almost like trained different strains of oyster mushrooms to eat different types of waste products, cigarette butts, baby diapers. Mm-hmm. There's specific mushrooms, specifically oyster mushrooms, that will eat plastic. I agree. Mushrooms are something that I really feel are having a moment right now. And the great thing also about mushrooms is they're a localized food source. Once again, you can grow a bunch of oyster mushrooms on the top of your fridge. And that's such a huge source of protein. You can teach kids about it. One of the easiest types of mushrooms that you can grow. And then also helping people access and advocate for themselves as much as possible. That is so important, both as witches and people that actually dream of a world where we're not just in this late stage capitalist hell. You know, we have to create these networks of care, information sharing, skill sharing, and bringing it to be both, since we still have the internet for now, on that bigger network scale of information sharing, but then helping our localized communities where we're at.
Yeah, I agree. I teach local mushroom cultivation classes, and I've been working on an online course because I feel like, you know, living in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of people do have access to mushrooms here. So I would like to be able to teach people that maybe live in like the desert or something to cultivate their own mushrooms, because it is a really good food source. And also the blocks that you fruit the mushrooms on, I cannot remember the name of the show. My partner watches all those like Alaska shows all the time. But he was building houses out of the spent mushroom blocks and mud. And they were just like these like really nice fancy houses. Like I was like, that's like my dream house made out of spent mushroom blocks. I also saw recently that, I mean, they've been doing it a while, but they're making biodegradable like mushroom caskets, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, the eco burials. Okay. Yeah,
that sounds like something I'd want.
Me too. Well, you know, if I go, write that down. Put me in one of the mushroom caskets.
Yeah, and they actually have entire suits that are inoculated with certain types of fungi that can help with the decomposition process. I mean, I one of my hopes is that we have as a society to turn more towards green technologies, and fungi are just gonna be right there, save all of our asses. Just like fungi really are just so incredible.
There's a lot of misconception though, I feel like, because my mother-in-law and a lot of like my older family, I've noticed when I got like super into mushrooms and cultivation, they were like, you know, my kids would be out in the yard and they'd pick one up and they'd be like, put that down, go wash your hands, you're gonna die. And it's, I just feel like there's so much like misconception, like, you know, with Amanita and like even psilocybin and some of the other mushrooms. And I'm hoping that that does start to kind of like change soon, that people aren't so scared of mushrooms, because they really are amazing. So yeah.
Oh my gosh, a family member of mine, a little bit ago, but it really stuck with me as a sad moment. Her dog got sick and took it to the vet. And the vet just asked, I guess offhandedly, if there were mushrooms growing in her backyard. She has a huge backyard. And she was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, get rid of those. The dog probably ate mushrooms and got sick, not even knowing what kind of mushrooms they are. And so she's out there like spraying literal poison on the ground to kill all the mushrooms. And it's like, a medical professional told you to do that. That is very sad.
That's something that's been kind of like interesting too. I've noticed with my in-laws and family members that are, they have to have these like white picket fences and these green lawns, and they're out there spraying the poison. And I'm like, one of the biggest things that you can do to like fight inflation and like food is like eat the weeds. Like there are so many edible that are just growing in your yard that are weeds that you're spraying. And I'm like, it can be good for you, the environment. You know, I worry about my kids running around barefoot after they've been like spraying their pretty green grass. You could be eating that. You could be making medicine or like a salve or something from these weeds you're spraying. So yeah, that's my soapbox.
One little for fuck's sake at a time.
Fry it from the rooftops, please.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, Dandelion is probably one of our mascots on this year podcast. We're huge Dandelion fans, and people spend so much money getting rid of what is otherwise a plant that is literally medicine from the flowers to the roots. It's all medicine. Like millions of dollars just to get rid of them. And it's, I'm a huge dandelion enthusiast. I will spread them everywhere. I don't care if they're weeds. They are found on all continents save Antarctica. And I really feel like they're medicine for us. Mm-hmm. And I want society to shift from the idea that we have to use poison and chemicals to kill it. And start seeing it for what it really is. It's like this extremely helpful plant ally that's here to help heal us, that we just
let's spread
about.
Dandelion seeds on the governor mansion lawn for the environment.
Exactly. It's kind of
perfect for that. Dandelion was the plant that actually first got me into herbalism. Because I remember reading, and I've looked for it since, and I haven't been able to find it, but I thought I recalled it being on a Johns Hopkins database, and this whole thing about like how dandelion might have all of these benefits, but it's understudied because it's not well funded to study it. And I was just, that's it. I have to dedicate my life to plants and figuring them out. All of the billions of dollars that are spent on research for these things that kill us specifically, and then not telling us how we can just go out in our yard and get this thing that could... No, the logic of that system is perverse.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many plants. Like, I could go outside right now in my yard, and I've got, like, plantain and, berries, which are super invasive, but, like, the leaves are great for, you know, like, your skin, and you, like, eat some mushrooms that give you the shits. I guess you could make blackberry tea for that, you know? So it's like, I don't know. There's so many different plants that, I wish people could, if that's one thing I would preach, is just advocating for yourself and your family and doing your research and reading and connecting with people that know these things and keeping that alive and well, that, you know, like we have to like look out for our plant friends. So.
Yeah. And creating spaces where we can harvest. Like, there's excellent plants in my family member's yard, but I'm not going to pick them because I saw her spray poison on the yard. So it's like, ooh, not going to eat it from there. So it's like I've gone out with my niece before and been like, could eat this plant and this plant and this plant, but wait till you come to your uncle's house to eat these plants.
Yeah.
And we'll taste them together, you know? Yeah. But yeah. Plantain. Oh my gosh. Just put it everywhere. Dandelion, chickweed. People spend a lot of money trying to get rid of chickweed and cleavers. It's like the most helpful plants are the ones that we poison the land to get rid of, it seems.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, but maybe this is starting to shift. And that's kind of my hope, is that as our society, the way it has been, is starting to collapse, as the tower is starting to finally come down, we'll be there to rebuild better systems that are more human in the ashes. So we only got a couple minutes left. Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know about And anything as far as events or classes or offerings that you have, if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, I mean, I've got, you know, my Instagram is really like my main source of kind of promoting everything that I do. So I do have some yoga classes coming up that I'm going to be doing, like donation-based outdoor, being it's nice weather here in the Pacific Northwest. I'm not going to have to pay to rent a space. My goal is by like October to open an event space here in Portland where I can open my doors to people like you guys that want to maybe come teach classes about these things. So I'm working really hard on that. So honestly, I really like to take summers. I say off, but it's when I actually go out and do most of my foraging and kind of collecting. And, you know, I kind of work with the seasons a little bit in that sense that I spend most of it outside and then I process it in fall and then have all these new offerings. So I keep everything updated on my Instagram and Etsy. But yeah, I'm really, really looking to open that space because I think it is important to be able to offer these classes and workshops for people in my local community. And I'm honestly like a cavewoman, so I struggle with technology stuff, but I'm hoping to find somebody that can record these classes at the event space and make it more available for everybody. And all of it, I'm just really hoping to have it be like all just donation based, like trade, barter, things like that. I think is really important to building up community, even across the country, worldwide, is just the trade system and helping each other out. So, I mean, really, that's kind of, I'm just really grateful that you had me come on here and chance to talk to you guys more about things. And I look forward to seeing what you guys are up to doing as well. So hopefully we can all stay connected and come up with some cool classes to offer at my event space when I open.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I have been teaching yoga at two different bases here in Salem. So I would absolutely love another venue to teach yoga.
Yeah, I'm actually working on, a yoga teacher training program, but mine's going to be a little bit different because I am going to add like a 6-month course that's optional, obviously, around psychedelic harm reduction and proper dosage and preparation. So you can find these plant medicines and prepare them safely for yourself. I'm going to have even stuff all the way down to like extracting like mescaline and DMT on there. So that way, you know, I think everyone should have the knowledge to be able to do these things themselves. So being I have been teaching my yoga with plant medicines, all types of plant medicines, I want to extend that to people that want to do that as well. So I'm really working on right now a teacher training program that teaches people how to safely offer like medicines and dosage and all of that fun stuff. So I'm hoping to kind of put that out there too. So, but I would love more yoga instructors in my community here. So that would be great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think this was a great conversation that our listeners are going to find useful, insightful, maybe even be curious about it. And thank you so much for coming on to talk to us about it today.
Well, thank you for having me. And it was really nice to meet everybody. Keep me informed on your upcoming events as well. So
Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you so much to Candace of Moon Maiden Alchemy for coming on the show to talk about plant and fungal allies. If you're interested in checking out their work and booking their services, be sure to check them out on Instagram. Now it's time to talk about how you can support the show and help us generate a small bit of income that helps us keep the metaphorical lights on here, and that is through our Patreon. Over on Patreon, for just $1 a month, you will receive access to Angel's yoga practice. Right now, they are leading a yoga series based around the tarot and have been sharing videos from that. Also, we post Patreon-only episodes of topics that we don't quite want to share with the wider world, or exclusively for our supporters, including our short-form series, Deity Deep Dives, Tripping Through the Tarot, and Who's in Bloom. You can access this bonus content, along with early release ad-free episodes, for only $1 a month.
At our next level of support, I am pleased to announce that those of you who support us at the sticker exchange level should check your mail if I have your address, or respond to my message on Patreon if I don't have your address. I sent out a bunch of stickers to our supporters at this level, in part to apologize for the lack of stickers of the past year. In this mailing, I've included stickers from my yoga practice, Mushroom Moon Yoga, a reprinted sticker of Iris by Aura with the info for the Trans Telethon 3 happening November 20th, 2025 in Eugene, Oregon, and streaming on our Twitch, as well as a sticker from the cooking show that I'm producing with my partner Rick, featuring his adorable dog Marty, called Cooking Mushrooms with Marty That He Can't Eat, which you can find on YouTube. Speaking of my partner, Rick, we are working on launching our new podcast, Movies from Whenever, where we will watch a movie I haven't seen and then talk about it. Our next watch will be Forgetting Sarah Marshall after our first episode featuring Sunset Boulevard, aka How I Became a Silent Movie Starlet's Fuckboy. Inku will also be featured on an upcoming episode where the three of us watch one of his favorite movies, True Stories, a Talking
Heads movie.
Y'all,
it is so good. It is so good. Just watch the episode. You'll love it.
We are planning on recording and editing quite a few of these before we release them, so we're still a bit out before our launch, but Ruby is currently working on our theme music, so I will be excited to let y'all know when that comes out. Back to our sticker exchange, I will be releasing a sticker of Yameya that I am working on, and I hope to get more of the Egyptian god stickers from Kalika produced this year, including Sekhmet and Nekhbet, the vulture goddess. Oh, and our Etsy is now back up with most of our stickers from the previous exchanges available for you to purchase a la carte. I've heard witchcraft on Etsy is having a moment right now, so I'm scheming to perhaps expand our offerings over there. So be sure to check it out if you would like to get a hold of stickers we've previously released.
And finally, at our highest level of support, the Science Witch Coven, for $10 a month, or roughly the cost of what one cup of coffee will be in the next few months, possibly, you will get access to Angel's tarot practice. You'll get a birth chart reading from Angel with my input as well. And this is a way for us to keep our astrological and tarot skills sharp while providing insight to our listeners at this level. So if you are wanting to get your chart read or get a reading from Angel over Zoom, reach out on Patreon to book a reading or chart analysis. And of course, listening and sharing the podcast is an invaluable way to spread our Science Witch agenda with your friends and family. If you're looking to find community, check out our Discord, where you can chat about different topics, connect with other queerdos, and share memes about the absurdity that is our possibly cursed timeline.
And if you want to check us out on social media, we are on Blue Sky as Science Witch Pod and Threads, Facebook, and Instagram as Science Witch Podcast. Show notes and transcripts are available on our website at sciencewitchpodcast.com. If you hate social media like me, you can always email us at questions@sciencewitchpodcast.com. Until next time.
Live long and prosper.
And blessed be.
Fuck yes.
Ah!